against communism, so-called, really against the Soviet Empire. And now we are in a situation where we're pushing, just to throw another issue into it, we're pushing the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is largely justified by it acting as a counterforce to the rising power economically and militarily of China. All of this seems to me to bring together large amounts of power and wealth, all of it not in the interest of the human beings of this planet, or for that matter, of the planet as a whole. Anyway, so, you know, this is kind of a very upsetting situation. It's very difficult to know where to begin. It's very hard to find a pathway that means anything. And one of the things I'm very disappointed about, and I have to say this, is that in the last few years, as I've watched street demonstrations and so on in Portland, I've seen a phenomenon grow, which is basically a eschewing of discipline in movements. One of the things that we definitely learned in the struggles in the South that brought African Americans to some degree of equity in our society was a decision to use the teachings of Gandhi and other pacifists and to observe a discipline that was strict and strong of nonviolence. Now, demonstrations seem to be often just simply an expression of rage, expression of disappointment, with no particular target and with no particular thought to the goals. Just a comment. And maybe I'm unfair here because I'm not really involved. I'm not central to that. I'm an older guy. I'm not involved in the leadership of these things. But I'm seeing a pattern that allows attacks to be made and allows people to be dismissive of movements that are so important to the improvement and the betterment of the planet as a whole. I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Who do we got? Sean, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe. So I have a hypothetical question for you.
Hypothetical? Okay.
Hypothetical question. What do power sources need to justify war and control of resources, control of people? Just control.
Well, I think...
What mainly do they look forward to doing or creating in order to justify?
Well, I think they create an enemy and they create fear about that enemy.
Right, but mainly, I agree... But I think it's mainly generating hatred.
Okay.
You have to generate hatred in order to get people to fight or fight against each other or not knowing why they're fighting.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that. I'll let you finish, but let me just say.
Oh, it's okay.
It's an interesting thing because one of the earliest musical comedies that I remember was South Pacific.
Ironically,
one of the songs in that is "You Have to Be Taught to Hate." Because one of the issues in that was the issue of racism. Just, you know, way back, post-World War II. But go ahead with what you were saying.
Yeah, there were many things going through my head while waiting to get on the line. But
sure.
That came to me simply because, I mean, you know, just what's going on in Yemen. I mean, everything from, you know, what happened in Tulsa is simply a hypothetical question I had in my mind. Why is it so important, at least for those who think it's important, that the world, so to speak, be white? You know, it's like you look at so many rest of the things in the world, and there's all sorts of different colors out there. But to a few, they seem to find it very important for some reason that if people aren't white, then there's justification to hate and even kill them for no reason at all.
Well, remember...
And that's really...
Yeah.
I mean, that's just freaky. But I think my main point is, you know, like in Yemen, okay? You specifically mentioned the west and the south of Yemen, where the Houthis are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's where supposedly...
Actually,
you know,
the Houthis... Okay, anyway, yeah.
Is killing these people.
Yes.
Now, you know, you look at the geographical location of that, it's right on the Gulf of Oman.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, you know, the pacts that were made after World War II with Roosevelt and the Saudis, that was when they decided they really needed that oil. And I think, you know, even though the press, and I have to say that even I feel Democracy Now! Is guilty of this, is the impression is that this is a war that the Saudis are waging. And I say, no, this is a war. The Saudis did not have the technical ability. They were not a high-tech warring nation until the United States came along. The United States is funding that war. They are supplying all the military hardware. They are supplying all the training. This is a U.S. war. This is not a Saudi war. This is on behalf of the U.S. and helping the Saudis, of course, to push the oil and protect the Gulf of Oman. The biggest thing I just will finish because I heard the bell is that this is the military gone crazy. The military runs the government. It's not the other way around. And the military just decided after years and years of a boondoggle plane called the F-35 by Lockheed that could not even fly, that the generals just decided that now it is deemable to fly and buy, and have ordered roughly 2,000 of these planes at $100 million plus apiece. This is the danger to the planet, is the military.
Okay.
And I think people underestimate, as Andrew Feinstein made his book, the shadow world. This is the shadow world that shadows the world, is this global arms trade that's going on that creates such hatred. Anyway, that's what I have.
Okay, thank you very much.
An
interesting point, actually, about the military-industrial complex. Something Eisenhower warned us about at the end of his tenure as president, I believe it was 1960. We all need to understand. We all need to understand these issues in terms of a larger global picture. And when people talk about this notion of Eurocentric supposed superiority, we need to remember in the history of this country, this was a nation carved out of a land which was maintained and richly populated prior to the coming of Europeans, and that there was a deliberate and concerted attempt to commit genocide against Native American peoples, and of course to take people from Africa, enslaving them multi-generationally. Those two heritages are still playing out in the United States, and there still is a lack of justice for both groups. And I think that's produces both guilt and paranoia, and it also, of course, produces a situation of discrimination, which has a negative effect on the lives of so many people. And it warps everything in our culture. And until there's an understanding and a recognition of all of that by most of us, the problems are going to continue to persist. Meanwhile, there are ways in which one can put political pressure on all of this. I keep coming back to my own experiences, very minor really, in the movement prior, long ago, back in the 60s and into the 70s and 80s, that really we can reach people, but we cannot have a dream of revolution, of armed conflict. Those who have the weapons can always dominate us. Our strength is in the virtue of what we are offering, what we argue for, and our persistence in that. And I really do believe, I was very influenced, oddly enough, by Dorothy Day and others. I really do believe that the path that has to be taken has to be one where the popular culture turns to a nonviolent approach to these issues. I got to change the subject for a minute. Coming up on KBOO this morning at 9, Alternative Radio, Ralph Nader, who I'm not going to go into right now, speaks on progressive matters. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Code Pink activist Benjamin talks about U.S. provision of arms to Saudi Arabia and the rise of the killing of non-combatants in Yemen. This is I didn't know that. I think it's good. We also hear about current issues on the West Bank and Syria. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. The station really exists on your support. This is really, really, truly your station. All right, we're actually focusing in today, I guess, on the Yemeni thing and on Saudi Arabia's power in the Middle East, and the fact of military-industrial development and its impact on all of this, not to mention the continued injustices that are perpetrated by, let's call it the Euro, trying to think of a way to, Euro military, industrial, well, you get the idea, complex. All right, 231-8187, let's hear from you. Francis, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. I agree with you that whatever happens has to be nonviolent. And I also agree with your caller who just spoke about the military-industrial complex. And just recently, a couple of days ago, the Pope came out with a statement in one of his writings in which he said that those in power do not want peace because they're making too much money from war. And I believe that to be extremely the case, the truth. The perpetration of war and conflict is very lucrative right now. And at the expense of innocent people. The money is being made from actually literally killing, and that's it. Those airplanes we just talked about and the bombs, they've got to use them in order to keep that business going. I know that you don't support any, you can't speak about candidates politically because of KBOO's nonprofit status. We seem to be able to do a lot of talking against a certain candidate, but not anything in promoting others. However, the only candidate who has spoken about truth and reconciliation and having a truth and reconciliation commission is Jill Stein from the Green Party. And I'm hoping that somewhere along the line, the ideas that they are promoting will be accepted by those of us who want this warmongering to stop. We also want the prison industrial complex to stop. There's a lot of profit being made off of pain and suffering of individual people. I think that a commission would help as far as us spelling out the truth in real terms and acknowledging the oppression that is occurring all over this world for the profit of somebody. And that somebody ends up, I started thinking about this, it really isn't a person. It's corporations who are not people. They call them people. Corporations are not people. They never have been people. They are corporations. And their only conscience is short-term profit. So as long as we keep giving them that status and their conscience is short-term profit, they're going to find a way. It doesn't matter how many people are killed, how many people are in prison, how many people are maimed, how many people are traumatized. As long as that profit keeps happening, that's the goal. We have to change that up. We have to stop it. And I think that good people of goodwill can do that. But it's going to take a huge, determined effort on our part to do that. And as long as we keep dismissing people who are presenting that as an option, it won't happen. We need to accept the fact that anybody that's participating in this corporate industry right now who is allowing this stuff to happen is not the person that we want to be our leader.
Okay, I appreciate it. Your comment.
All right, you take care.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
I'm not going to go into a conversation about the advantages and disadvantages of third parties, progressive parties, historically in America. This is a topic that draws an enormous amount of anguish and anger. I think sometime I would like to devote a show discussing that whole issue, talking about the role that inadvertently I think Ralph Nader played in the 2000 election, and so on. But I also think that it is hard to build a progressive movement when one is actually literally threatened by a American form of fascism. And I'll leave it go at that. I do want to hear from people. That's not the subject, really, that we're talking about today. I'm trying to focus on the fact of the matter that the United States is actively supporting a murderous regime, a reactionary regime, a totalitarian regime in Saudi Arabia, that is pushing a form, and this is an important distinction, it is pushing a form of Islam called Wahhabism, developed by a guy whose name was Wahhabi, which is an intolerant form that absolutely supports, it's a Sunni form, that absolutely Sephardic, it really supports a fundamentalism that is extremely dangerous and is fueling a lot of conflict. Anyway, I do think that the moral position that one should hold is that one should not be in the arms business, not be selling arms to countries with the assumption that somehow this sale of arms creates a better world. It simply doesn't, and it's really obvious, and the people who profit by it are the essentially the sellers of war and destruction. 231-8187. Jeremy, you're on the air.
Yeah, well, going back to your first call, if you can remember that far, she was. I'm a Satanist, and she was worried about, you know.
You're a Satanist? Wait.
No, I'm also joking. But
okay. I just, about, you know, I don't know.
She was worried about my great God Lucifer running the show here, and we couldn't care less.
Well,
anyway,
okay. I'll just pass on all of that. Okay.
Having quoted Lenin to start, you know, what is to be done. I'd like to suggest, sadly, someone's written a book with this title, and he was a Marxist also. Mike Albert wrote something called What is to be Undone. But I think we should look at what should be undone. And I would argue that what needs to be undone is the nation state.
Wow.
And as long as you have nation states, you're going to have everything else that comes with them. And everything else that comes with them has, I believe, you know, led us to the situation we're in now, where, we're murdering the planet, even as we murder the citizens of the planet. So the idea that you can somehow cauterize the American imperial adventure by, you know, having even Elizabeth Warren say, okay, we're gonna stop selling arms to the Saudis. Well, as long as there are Saudis, they're. You know, it's likely to be, you know, horrible misery and oppression in that part of the country. I'm sorry, in that part of the earth. So I don't really see any solution to any of this unless we stop thinking that any nation states, including our own, can do anything other than the horrible things that they've been doing, which seem inherent to the project.
So from your perspective, there's no degree of making things better. It's only this or that.
Well, do you think things have generally been getting better? Do you think that the liberal agenda, as promoted by you know, the greatly venerated Franklin Roosevelt and his pathetic successors have improved the world?
That's an interesting question. I think that the creation of social democracy and of social reforms within the context of capitalism improves things for people. Whether or not that is an adequate device, it really is questionable. The fact that now we discover something that we should have known all along, that is that the planet is interconnected and that the role human beings play is in that planet's health is often very negative. All of that also needs to be looked at. But I don't buy the idea that it's an either-or environment. I think that's, first of all, an impossible problem, and second of all, a bad strategy. But I appreciate your comment, and I see,
you know,
where you're coming from.
As somebody who, I'm talking about you, in one way or another, you know, is a goo-goo. You're a good government type. You think the government is, you know, that was actually a real phrase of the turn of the century, so you know that.
Yeah, I know that.
And I'm a no government type. There's no government like no government like no government I know.
Okay.
And I would like to, you know, raise that subject.
So would you characterize yourself as an anarcho-syndicalist then?
I'm certainly not a syndicalist because I'm not terribly impressed with the role of trade unions and
okay.
the furtherance of certainly in the present day, but I'm inspired when I'm inspired by anarchism. Yes.
Okay, I'm gonna let you go. I appreciate your comments, Jeremy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 231-8187. We're talking, I've been focusing in on the murder of the Houthi people by the Saudis, who either want to take over all of the south of the Arabian Peninsula and or want to destroy any dissident element of Islam, arguing that there is only one true Islamic faith and that it essentially is Wahhabi. And Wahhabism, remember, is the movement that created the enormous effort to make war against the Western world that we saw in the destruction of the World Trade Center and other elements of murderous behavior. So, and I also want to make a very important distinction here. Whatever you or I may think of religions, however you or I may think of the organization of the divine, the fact of the matter is that one can be more or less tolerant within the context of a multi-religious situation, and that things that do not have tolerance to them, that some kinds of religious fundamentalism, whether it's Christian or Islamic or otherwise, are inevitably leading human beings into folly and death and destruction. That's my position. I believe in tolerance, and I believe in discourse as a way of resolving conflicts. And I also believe that the creation of the military-industrial complex has a serious role in destroying a rational discourse in the world. And that would be true of the military-industrial complex in China or in Russia or in the United States or anywhere else. I want to hear from you, 231-8187. Who do we have? Sylvia, you're on the air.
Thank you. I think this conversation, as I recall, some time back, started out considering the United States' support of Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
Saudi Arabia's religious orientation, the divisiveness of the Wahhabism and the Shia versus the Sunnis.
Mm-hmm.
And our military support of Saudi being major disruption in the universe right now. I think this overlooks our support of Israel through this century. Israel's hatred of the Islamic people that are landed there also. And it seems like we always seem to skip over that. Even just a few minutes ago, you mentioned the divisiveness of religion and its potential, whether it's Christian or Islam, but you never seem to mention the underlying hatred of Jews against Islamic people. And I think that's becoming rampant even in this country among American Jews.
So you see a rise of not anti-Semitism, but anti-anti-Semitism. That is seen as an active force in the world. Is that your idea? I mean, I didn't put that very well. Let me just simply say that you see Zionism, I think this is perhaps more relevant, as a force for real trouble in the world. Is that encapsulating your idea?
Well, there's Zionism and there's Zionism, but what I do find is there's kind of like we don't ever address our role in supporting Israel,
mm-hmm.
and it's fencing people into concaves as something. It's just that's not an issue anymore, and that is a major issue underlying what's going on in the Middle East. Whether we're talking about protecting Israel against the Iranians, the Iraqis, the Saudis, and I don't think the Saudis and Wahhabism, I mean, I understand that the real threat that creates in terms of their religious schools in other countries,
mm-hmm.
especially in North Africa. I don't think that's any more of a threat than what Israel is producing among its own people in Israel and spreading throughout Jewish people throughout the world.
Okay. I thank you for the comment. I think that the overall power the impact of Zionism is much more limited than is the enormous scope of interest in a kind of fundamentalism out of and Wahhabism out of Islam. But certainly the role of Israel in the region complicates things and creates some enormous distortions in politics. And I thank you for the call. So who else do we have? Jerome, please talk to us.
Hey, Joe, Jerome here.
Okay.
Just to follow up and keep us on topic regarding the U.S. Support of Saudi Arabia and this genocidal eradication of the Houthi people in Yemen.
Mm-hmm.
This is caught in the media sideshow that we have today. I think we've really got a rough job ahead of us to have this settle into the American mentality, because I don't think over 99% of the people in America don't even know where Yemen is, for this matter. So a program like this is extremely important. But there has been a gentleman a congressman, in response to what another caller of yours has said today, if I was really a brave individual, I'm over 65 at this point, and if I was a brave individual, I would consider the cessation of my tax-paying monies going to support another American incursion. We can go on down the line forever into American incursions that have been negative in terms of the overall political outlook for the world. But specifically in terms of this campaign in Yemen, there is a congressman in California, Ted Lieu, L-I-E-U. He's a Democrat representing Los Angeles County.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why does this have got to do with us? Well, he's been the lead gentleman in Congress trying to get Obama administrative officials and Defense Department and other people to reconsider the U.S. backing for the Saudi-led war. And he's been only, but there is a rising movement, and I would say it's still on the rise and really has suffered a lot of setbacks, but he originally started in October. So he's a former Air Force and colonel in the Air Force Reserves. But, you know, there have been so many massacres initiated on the part of Saudi with our arms, UK, with British arms, with Brazilian arms. But really, the whole issue, too, is cluster bombs. They've been cluster bombing the population.
I'm glad you brought the cluster bomb horror up.
Yeah, I mean, that's an issue in and of itself. I mean, the UN has outlawed cluster bombs, and we've been using them in a bunch of venues around the world. But I mean, this is an extremely an emergency situation. I mean,
I just want to add one thing to support your argument. The United States is the only country still making cluster bombs, as far as I know. How do you spell Lieu?
L-I-E-U. This is all like a lead article. All anyone has to do today is log on The Intercept.
Uh-huh.
This is an article by Ben Norton.
Okay.
So the Intercept is really the place to go to get all the information up to date, in addition to your information, which has been invaluable.
Well, I can't compare with The Intercept. They have resources that are enormous and function in a very different and much more international way. I really appreciate your comments. I'm glad you reminded us of Congressman Lieu.
You bet. And we have to eradicate this madness. Four MS medical facilities has been bombed by the Saudi-led coalition. They're bombing hospitals. They're killing children. I mean, 6,500 Yemenis have been killed since the war began in March 2015. We have to do everything we can. So Blumenauer, in my case, will get a letter and constant information regarding his opposition in this sense.
I do think that people should be writing their congresspeople about this. I think that this is something that could conceivably be changed. It's very hard to imagine any kind of change in American policy during this interregnum between the Obama administration and whatever comes after. So, you know, but I still think it's worthwhile.
You bet.
And I really appreciate your call. And thank you for reminding us of Congressman Lieu's brave efforts.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, and reminding us about Intercept, which is a great source of information. Who else do we have?
We got
Okay, Jeff, you're on the air.
Yeah. Well, Joe, thank you very much for this show. I appreciate it. And I wonder whether the one concept that might tie a lot of these disparate things together, even Donald Trump's coming challenge to the election result, is corruption. And I'm interested in your comments on how corruption plays into all of this.
Well, I'm not sure we have a great deal of corruption in our culture, and certainly in our politics. I think the creation by the Supreme Court of an unlimited source of monies to go to candidates is an essential element of extreme corruption in American politics, an extreme distortion that has become clearly a dangerous factor. I also, sometime in the near future, want to do a show about the plans of the Republicans at the state levels to hold the Constitutional Convention to alter the Constitution in God knows how many ways. So, yeah, corruption is really a major factor.
Well, what I was thinking about is in our foreign policy, to what extent and you mentioned this, to what extent is our support of the Saudi regime just a function of government supporting moneyed interests, both in the oil and also in the arms, particularly in the arms trade, bombs for profit?
Well, that's a good question, and it's an important one. I appreciate it.
And thinking back to the 2004 election and the controversy of voting machines, I think there are a lot of people who rightly or wrongly suspect the results of an election based on voting machines.
Well, and since you brought it up, my position on that is that the paper ballot should be the device used. Calculating the actual outcomes of elections can be done by machine, but those paper ballots should be retained. If there's a challenge, there should be recounts. And I think that until we have established the format of paper ballot as a national routine of elections, we're all always going to be suspicious. And whether that suspicion is justified or not really depends on the circumstances. And I really believe in the paper ballot.
Yes. Yes. If you're a conspiracy, if you're tended to look for conspiracies, non-transparent processes seem to be a good place to start.
Well, yeah, it'd be hard not to be suspicious of a system that depends on computers that can be manipulated. I also think that there's an enormous effort to disenfranchise people, particularly people of color throughout the United States, and it's very disturbing. Getting back to this question, I'm hoping that people listening to this show, if they do nothing else about this, will be writing to their congresspeople to ask that the United States cease supporting Saudi Arabia's military adventures, particularly their murderous attacks on the Houthi, who are a Shia people.
Well, here, and thank you. Thank you very much for that. And I wonder how many people realize how important letters are.
Well, they do have impact. That's certainly true. And thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
All right, 231-8187. I think we have time for at least one more person. George, you're on the air. George?
Harvey,
I'll take Harvey. Go ahead, Harvey.
Well, my feeling is to move away from oil. That's something that we can all do. Put solar panels on a roof, plug our electric cars in, move to wave power, wind power. It's the thing that we can do to stop all this, because it seems to all be centered on the oil, and especially with the burning up of the world. So that's something.
No, that's a good. That's a very good point. I didn't get into the environmental issues at all today, and it is certainly the case that we have the technologies now to build an electrical grid and a transportation grid that is not dependent on oil at all. That in fact is uses solar and wind power, and that's. I'm really glad you made that point.
Yes, it turns out that the armed forces are one of the biggest users of fossil fuel, and it seems to be the point that we all fight over.
It does seem to be the case, and certainly it is a very reactionary situation where we're still depending on stuff that should be left in the ground rather than turning to the possibilities of solar and wind. And I want to thank you very much. I want to thank you all today. This is an issue that I didn't really plan on doing, but I became so upset, so moved by what was happening to people in Yemen, that I had to do it. And I thank you all, and I'll see you all next week. You stay tuned to KBOO, because remember, it's the finest in public affairs programming, but also, amazingly, the best in music programming.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is...
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Extreme Amateur Games BMX Competition. Round 2, Sunday, August 28th at D Block Indoor Skate Park in Clackamas. This is Round 2 in the Mad Bro Extreme Amateur Games. Winners are allowed to compete in the following competitions and in the final. Again, that's Extreme Amateur Games BMX Competition Round 2. Sunday, August 28th at D Block Indoor Skate Park, 8921 Southeast Jansen Road in Clackamas. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on Alternative Radio, Ralph Nader speaks on progressive matters. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, Code Pink activist Medea Benjamin examines the U.S. provision of arms to Saudi Arabia and the rise of the killing of non-combatants in Yemen. Then Lara Kiswani of the Arab Resource and Organizing Center talks about